We left off on Daf Mem Ches Amud Beis, and we were up to the second section on the first Mishnah. So in my Gemara, I assume it's your Gemara too, it's 13 lines down. So the Mishnah had said that when you have an Asherah tree, it said, V'lo yavar tachteha v'im avar tameh. You're not allowed to walk underneath a tree. And that could have been from two perspectives. One reason why you might not be able to walk underneath the tree, but it really wouldn't be that you're not allowed to, it's just, it has consequences, is you might become tameh. In other words, you're allowed to walk in, if you're not a Kohen, you can walk into a cemetery, but if you walk into a cemetery and you come close enough to the graves, you become tameh. But the then the second consideration was there an issue of getting benefit, of getting hana from the shade of the tree. So we already really discussed that issue and the nature of the iser hana, and now we want to talk about the tumah question. So the Mishnah says you're not supposed to pass underneath that tree, and if you do, you're tameh. So the Gemara says, "My taima, why is that so?" The answer is iefshar deleka tikroves avodas kochavim, because it's inconceivable when you have an asherah tree. And I think the assumption here is that they are not actually worshipping the Asherah, but they worship, in this case, they worship underneath a tree. It is inconceivable that there isn't some tikrovas avodah zarah there, some materials which they use to sacrifice, you know, as the sacrificial worship of the avodah zarah. As our example that I've used, I guess I use frequently, probably the modern day equivalent in Western society where you would actually have tikrovas avodah zarah is the Eucharist after they perform their ritual. I don't know if it all gets eaten or not, but if there's anything left over, once it's consecrated, that is tikrovas avodah zarah. So the assumption is there must be some tikrovas avodah zarah underneath the tree, and the assumption is the following. Money, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseirahi, and this Mishnah is following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseirah. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseirah Omer, Minayin the Tikroves Avodas Kochavim Shemetama Abba Ohel, Shenemar. So how do you know that if you have items that were used and not just consecrated, it's not the consecrate, but actually use it in the sacrificial rites of idolatry, how do you know that those are metame ba'ohel, that if I have this tikrovas avodah zarah and I'm under the same roof, I become tame, just like if I were under the same roof as a mace? So he says, shenemar, very appropriate to yesterday's kriyas haTorah, vayit samdu leval pa'or vayochlu zivchei beisim. So this particular verse is in one of several retellings that are found in the Book of Psalms and Sefer Tehillim, which sort of retell various parts of Jewish history, whether it's the Exodus and the years in the desert, or maybe after they entered into Canaan. It's very interesting. These are very interesting because it's kind of like the first historical retellings of Jewish history. There's actually one earlier one, the earliest retelling. Anyone with the earliest retelling of Jewish Jewish historical experiences? It's famous, but you don't think of it in those terms. It's found in Sefer Devarim. Aramio Vedavi.
Oh, yeah.
Aramio Vedavi is the first retelling. It's a very short retelling of Jewish history, starting with the patriarchs down to the Exodus, right, and the entry into the land. Right, that is the sort of first retelling of Jewish history, and that's probably one of the reasons we make it sort of the focus of the Seder. But in Sefer Tehillim, you have some much more expansive ones. There are a few long chapters which are full of this. And in there, it's describing the sojourn in the desert, and it says vayitzamdu leval pa'or, which means they became attached to Baal Pa'or. That was the story at the end of yesterday's Kriyas HaTorah, when they worshipped at Pa'or, the Baal Pa'or in Shittim. Vayochlu zivchei meisim, and they ate the sacrifices of the dead. So now, what are zivchei meisim? Presumably, zivchei meisim, if it's talking about Pa'or, it means that they ate from the sacrifices that they sacrificed to Pa'or. In fact, how did the pasuk read? Vayochal ha'am vayishtachavu le'lohem. So what we might have said that they were just, you know, they put out some smorgasbord. In fact, there's a funny Targum Yonasan there on the Torah, which is, I think, actually fodder for anti-Semites. Bilam's advice to the Bilam's advice to Balak was have them selling food in the outer stalls at a discount. Basar mitimahon, half price, right? So that's how we can get the Jews to come in. All right, so it was a sale, and that was how to entice them to come in. But presumably they ate from the sacrificial worship, and the pasuk in Tehillim says vayochlu zivchei meisim. So there's a comparison drawn. Ma meis mitame ba'ohel. Just as a dead person is mitame in ohel, after krovas avodas kochavim mitame ba'ohel. So too, the sacrificial materials used for avodas zara are also mitame ba'ohel. I think it's pretty clearly accepted. Firstly, I don't think we paskel like Rabbi Yehuda ben Misera. We saw earlier the debate about avodas zara, whether it's Rabbi Akiva and the Chacham, whether it's mitame only through touching, or even through carrying, even if you don't touch it. It was a machlokas Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. But be that as it may, and where that Mishnah was, Avodah Zarah is not actually mitame ba'ohel, number one. Number two, as I think should be almost evident from the fact that this particular din is derived from a pasuk in Tehillim, that it's probably an asmachta. As a general rule in rabbinic exegesis, things that are derived from verses that are not found in the Torah, that are found in the rest of Nach, not in the Pentateuch, but the rest of biblical literature, are most of the time assumed to be rabbinic. In other words, the Gemara will say it's an asmachta. It's really just a din de rabbanan, and it leans, it's sort of, they establish sort of a reminder, you know, or something to lean on from the pasuk, but there's a sort of more central theological principle here, which Chazal believed that there was revelation once, and there's no revelation again. You know, for the Rambam, a simon for if a Navi Sheker comes and says, God told me the halacha is X, even if it's confirming the halacha, the Rambam assumes you kill the Navi because he's a Navi Sheker, because God does not give prophecy on law. Because there was revelation for halacha only once, that was to Moshe Rabbeinu and done. So the notion that you could learn anything from a verse that's not found in the Torah, but it's found in the Nevi'im, or it's found in the Ksuvim, already sort of runs afoul of that theology. Occasionally, the Gemara will say that either the din may be a din min haTorah, but it's not actually derived from there. It's just the Navi happens to mention it in passing. Or sometimes they say it's what we call a gilui milsa ba'alma, that the pasuk in Nevi'im or Ksuvim just happens to reveal something about the interpretation of words, but it's not that's actually the source of a halacha. But at the end of the day, usually laws that are learned from verses not in the Torah, verses elsewhere, are assumed to be an asmacht. And here I think we will see in the next section, it's very clear that this din of tikroves avodah zarah, defiling someone who's under a common roof with it, is only a din de rabbanon. Okay. So now the last line in the Mishnah said, "Haisa gozelas es harabim, v'over tachteha tahor." Now, normally you're not supposed to pass underneath a tree, and the last line that we just dealt with in the Gemara said, if you do, you become tameh. But what happens if you're in a place where they plant Asherah trees, and the Asherah trees spread out and cover the entire street? So there's no way, or the sidewalk, it's a public space. And it extends from the private rishus, and it's sort of cutting into the public space. So the Mishnah says, our text of the Mishnah says as follows, "Hoysa gozelas es harabim v'avar tachteha tahor." If the tree was stealing from the public and he passed underneath it, it's tahor. So there are two questions that have to be addressed here. Number one, how if a tree is actually conveys tumah because of tikrovas avodah zarah underneath it, why, just because, okay, granted the tree should not be overhanging the public space, but why aren't you tame? That's the question the Gemara doesn't ask. The Gemara asks a more, perhaps more important question, not a why, but a what question. I'll formulate the question in the following fashion. The Mishnah says that if the tree was stealing from the public, it's overhanging public space, and you pass underneath it, you are tahar. Here's the question. Are you allowed to pass underneath it? So what's really the question? That's the Gemara's question. Why is it a question? And this is, by the way, sort of here a basic principle of Mishnaic literary exegesis. The Mishnah said, if you passed underneath it, you remain tahar. It doesn't...
Bidiyavid?
Correct. That language is, by its technical formulation, bidiyavid. Right? In other words, if you say, notlin es halulav, you use what in Hebrew we call the participle, the hoveh, the present tense in Hebrew, that implies that you may do so lechatchila. In other words, that is 100% good to do at the outset. If you say that im notal kosher, if you took the lulav, it's good, that implies, again, sometimes it may be inexact, it implies if you did it, it's good. But that's not the ideal way of doing it. And this is sort of, if you want the quintessential example of this, the first four words of Maseches Chulin state the following. Hakol shochatin, all may slaughter, ushchitasan kshera. and their slaughtering is valid. And the Gemara points out that those four words contain a contradiction within them. Hakol shochatin implies, whoever hakol is, in other words, the Mishnah will list, the Gemara will add others, lechatchila, any of this people on this list may do shchita. They may slaughter the animal. Ushchitasan kshera implies that if they slaughtered it, it's good, it's valid. But lechatchila, they're not supposed to shech. And the entire 2.5 blot that start the Masechta are deal with trying to resolve this contradiction. What case is being spoken about? What's the line of how far can you go where it's good lechatchila? And where and what point do you cross it and it's only good post facto b'di'evet? But that is, in terms of reading rabbinic texts, that is a broadly accepted principle in Shas. I mean, I think it's linguistically correct. Right? There's a difference between saying you may do X, and if you did X, it's valid. So the Gemara wants to know, the Mishnah said that if it was gozeles hasarabim, and you passed underneath it, you're tahar. The question is, okay, that's if you did it. But are you still allowed to do so? In other words, apparently the fact that the tree was not supposed to be overhanging there was enough for us to say there's no din of tumah. Now that should be obvious based on what I said before, why. But are you allowed to go there in the first place? So the Gemara immediately asks, ibayin lehu, ovar o over, which means, is it that v'ovar tachta, in other words, the way our Mishnah is formulated, it reads, ha'isa gozeles hasarabin v'ovar tachta hatahar. If you wanted to modify the Mishnah to bestate lechatchila, you would say the following. All you have to do is swap, move above and add one, which you'd read as follows. Ha'isa gozeles hasarabin over tachta v'tahar. Right? So the Gemara wants to know what is really the intent of the Mishnah. Not what's the text, but ibayilu, avar o over. In other words, is the Mishnah dafka if you passed underneath it, but not that you're allowed to? Or is it means that you're allowed to as well? So, of course, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar Mishmei Dechizki Amar over, Rabbi Yochanan Amar im avar. So the Gemara says, initially, it's a machlokas. One, Chizkiah, who I believe is Rabbi Yochanan's Rebbe, says, over, you're allowed to lichatchila pass underneath it. And Rabbi Yochanan says, if you passed underneath it. So the Gemara then says immediately, velo pligi, there's no actual argument. Ha de'ika dirka acharina, ha de'leka dirka acharina. It depends whether or not there is another route that you could have traveled, and another route that's of equal ease. And as if you have to go around and it's longer, that's not required. But if there was another route that you could have equally chosen, then you're not supposed to go underneath that one. But if you did, you're tahar. If there is no other shorter route, this is the shortest route, then not only if you pass underneath it are you tahar, but you're actually allowed to choose that route. Okay. Fine. Then the Gemara tells the following story. Amar le Rav Sheshes l'sham'e. Rav Sheshes said to his assistant, Rav Sheshes was blind. The Gemara in Eiruvin speaks about two Amoraim, each were terrified of one another. Rav Chista and Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes was an enormous baki. He was tremendous memory, and he knew all the Mishnayis and all the Brises. And Rav Chista was afraid he would say something, and Rav Sheshes would say, ah, but it's against this Brisa you know about, or it's against that Brisa. And Rav Chista was incredibly sharp, a very, very sharp mind, and Rav Sheshes was, you know, terrified of Rav Chista's Svara. Now, the fact that Rav Sheshes was the one who was the baki in Mishnayis is not a surprise. You see this, by the way, you see a number of times in the Gemara where you had blind Tanaim. What's a Tana? So one usage of the word Tana is a rabbinic sage who appears in the Mishnah. The other use of Tana, which is very common, is someone whose job in the Amoraic period, his job was to recite Brises. He was a memorizer. He wasn't necessarily the smartest guy in the Beis Medrash, but his job was to memorize the text of the Mishnayos and the Brises. And there are a number of places in the Gemara where you find Tanaim who are blind. And I don't think it's an accident, because people who lose the sense of sight often compensate with a greater sense of hearing and that kind of memory. So it happens to be Rav Sheshes was a huge baki. He had tremendous textual range. So Rav Sheshes was blind. For our purposes, it was blind, so he had an assistant. Amar, and what did he say to his assistant? Ki matis lahasam. When we reach the place where the Asherah tree is hanging, overhanging the Rishus Arabim, arhitani. Rahat in Aramaic is the same word as roots in Hebrew. It's actually cognate. Rush me through. In other words, when we get to the walking, as soon as we get to the Asherah tree, run quickly. Don't hang out underneath there with me. So the Gemara says, Hechidami. If there was no shorter route, lamalei aritani, why did his shamash have to make him run? Mishrashari, it's permitted. If there is another way, ki amar haritani mishari. If there's another route that you take that's equally short or shorter, then it shouldn't even be permissible if he rushes him through. So the Gemara says the following: la'olam daleka dirka achrina. No, it's a case where there is no other way, and really it should be permitted. V'adam chashav shani. The Gemara here enunciates a principle, which I guess is relevant for all members of the rabbin and all rabbis in the room, which is a higher standard of behavior is expected from rabbis. Even sometimes when there are kulas, even when there are kulas, even something might be permissible, so sometimes a rav is supposed to be machmir, because he's a model, and if he does something that even looks like maybe in some way, maybe it's not ideal or proper, then people will learn from that. Presumably, if the rabbi holds of standard X, most of the Baal Batim say, I can handle X minus 1, X minus 2, I'm not as holy as the rabbi, and therefore, the rabbi has to be extra machmir. So that's the principle of Adam Chashav Shani.
Why didn't you tell me you were going to talk about this week? I would have stayed out.
I would have stayed out no longer.
So this is a principle the Gemara has in a number of places. It's based upon two considerations. One is v'yisem nikiyam Hashem miYisrael, that a person is supposed to be above reproach and above and beyond suspicion, and for someone who is a Torah model, that's supposed to be how much more so. And the second aspect is that people will model themselves upon Talmud Chacham, and Talmud Chacham therefore has to be extra careful that his or her behavior is not something that can be taken as people will misunderstand or people will misinterpret and do things that they shouldn't do. That is why Rav Sheshes told his shamish to rush me through underneath the tree, even though Me'ikar Adin, really by right, it should have been permissible to walk under, to pass underneath that tree to get to the next location. Okay. Fine. So that's about you're walking underneath an Asherah tree. What about planting underneath an Asherah tree? So some plants, some vegetation likes shade, and some vegetation doesn't like shade. So that's one advantage or disadvantage of planting under a tree, and whether or not you will actually get hana, get benefit from the tree, which you're not allowed to do from an Asherah tree. That's fact number one. The other benefit you might get from planting underneath a tree is when the vegetation falls off the tree, the leaves fall off and so on, and they fall on the ground, and they decompose, and they provide fertilizer for the soil. So the Mishnah says the following. Zorin tachteha yirakos bimos hagishamim, avolo bimos hachama. One is allowed to plant underneath the tree vegetables in the winter season, in the rain season, avolo bimos hachama, not during the summer. Why? So the assumption is that during the summer, the vegetation needs shade, and the tree is providing that shade, and therefore you're getting benefit from the Asherah tree by planting your vegetables there. But during the rainy season, you don't need the shade. It's not hot, it's not so sunny, and therefore there's no hana that you get by planting it underneath the tree.
Question.
Yes?
We just learned that you're not supposed to go under an Asherah tree. To plant it, won't you have to go under the tree?
So it could be not literally directly underneath. It could be, you know, just slightly removed. In other words, there's no isser in passing, there's no isser in passing through the tzel, right? The Mishnah says you can't sit in the shade, but there's no isser in passing through the shade if you're not directly underneath the tree. So here, you can understand, it's a good question you have, then the answer may be that tachtah doesn't mean necessarily just underneath it. It could be just literally if the tree leaves, vegetation extends here, so you could plant right here. The vegetation will benefit from the shade of the tree, but you wouldn't be technically passing underneath it. Or if you were asking your non-Jewish gardener to plant your vegetables there, that would also hit him. There's no issue in being at the tree, but your vegetables growing underneath the tree. Okay. Chazirin, that does not mean pigs. It means probably lettuce, chazeres, which apparently benefits all year round from any kind of shade, all the time. The chazirin lo bimosacham milosavakshamim. So then you can't plant even during the rainy season, because there will be even though the weather's cooler, it still benefits from the shade. Some kind of vegetable that benefits from the shade. Rabbi Yosei Omer af lo yirakos bimosagsham. He says, no, how can you plant vegetables even milosavakshamim? Mipnei shahnevaya no sheres alehen. The leaves, the dead foliage, falls off onto the vegetables, onto the ground, the havalah and the zevel, and it becomes fertilizer, and therefore you're getting hana that way. Okay, so what exactly is the machlokas, Rabbi Yosei, and the chachamim here about the nevaya, about the fertilizer? In other words, presumably the chachamim agree. They're not arguing. This is not an argument in Metzius. Do the leaves fall off the tree onto the vegetation or not? I presume that's a fact, and nobody is disputing that. So if Rabbi Yosei, in fact, is correct, if the nevaya is nasei zevel, why is it that the chachamim permit? So here the Gemara introduces a very, very important concept, which is relevant to halacha, but not always understood properly. Lememra, this Mishnah would imply, the Rabbi Yosei Savar, ze v'ze goreim is aser. The Rabbanon Amri, ze v'ze goreim is mutter. What does ze v'ze goreim mean? So, ze v'ze goreim means when you have something that is transformed, it grows, it leavens, it curdles. You have something that gets changed, which you're getting benefit from the change. And in order to get something to change, generally speaking, you need some source of energy, if we might call it that. You need a catalyst. And the question is, let's say the catalyst for inducing this change from which you benefit, part of the catalyst is aser, part of the catalyst is mutter. Let's take a very simple, I think the simplest case of all these to deal with is a case the Gemara is going to quote on Daf Mem Tes Amud Aleph. You're making bread. You have a dough. And in order to make the dough, you need to add a little sourdough. That was their equivalent of yeast. Now, how much sourdough do you need? You don't need a whole lot. You probably need less than 1/60. Okay? Now, let's say I have sourdough that happens to be truma. And I put it into my dough. Now, from ordinary rules perspective, you would have said, well, it shouldn't matter, because there's less than 1/60. You're not allowed to do it l'chatchila, but if the sourdough of truma fell into my regular bread of chulin, I'm not a kohen, and it causes the bread to rise, so I would have said, well, the sourdough is less than 1/60, and therefore it's batel, because we usually use the shear of shishim, of 60 times that which is permissible that against that which is prohibited, to rule that something is permitted. However, the rule does not apply here. It doesn't apply here because there is a principle that davar hama'amid is not batel. If I have something that actually, why is it normally that you say that if you have 60 times the kosher ingredients against the non-kosher ingredient, why do we say it's batel? The answer is because it's assumed you can't taste it, and if you can't taste it anymore, then it doesn't exist for all intents and purposes. But let's say you have something which is a mamid, which you can't taste it. When you make cheese, the two classic examples are bread and cheese. When you make cheese, you can't taste the rennet that was put in, but the rennet has definitely made an impression on the milk. The milk is not the same anymore, right? You eat cheese because of something that the rennet did, even though you can't actually taste the rennet, right? When you take the sourdough and you put it in, you're not tasting the sourdough. You're tasting what the sourdough caused to happen in the larger dough itself. So that's called a davar hama'amid. In other words, it gives something shape. And midoraisa, it's batel, because you can't taste it. But midrabanan, we say that a davar hama'amid is not batel. Conceptually, why? Because the whole idea of bitel is that the thing no longer exists. But if I'm looking at this dough, and now it looks like bread, not, you know, like matzah, or I'm looking at this cheese, and it doesn't look like milk, it looks like cheese, then the effects, it's like the rennet or the sourdough is there. You can see it, even though you can't actually taste it, and you're not actually seeing the thing. Okay, so now I can come to our question of Zev is a goreim. Let's say, in order to make this bread rise, I need 3 ounces of sourdough. And I have, and into my bread I put, or falls in, 1.5 ounces of sourdough of chulin, and 1.5 ounces of sourdough of truma. And the assumption here is that neither on their own would have been capable of leavening the bread. You needed both. That's called ze v'ze goreim. And the question is, if you have two ingredients in the catalyst, one, both necessary, one of which is kosher and one of which is not kosher, do we say, since the kosher part contributed, even though the non-kosher part did, which one do we look at? Do we say that Zev is a goreim is now aser, or Zev is a goreim is mutter? So the Gemara suggests that that's the machlokus of what's going on in our Mishnah. Namely, the Rabbi Yosei believe, when the vegetables grow, when the irakos grow, so they grow from, where do they derive their nutrients from? From the ground. And Rabbi Yosei's comment is, where else are they going to derive their nutrients from? From the Asherah stuff that falls off. So you have two sources of that which helps, which fertilizes, provides the nutrients for the vegetables. One is heter, that's karka, the karka. One is iser, that's the decomposing leaves from the Asherah tree. Rabbi Yosei sounds like he says in the Mishnah it's aser. He holds that Zev is a goreim is aser. And the Tanakhama says that it's mutter, holds that Zev is a goreim is mutter. Okay, so that the Gemara is going to discuss that at great length. But there's one crucial point that has to be elucidated here. It might be a machlokas harishonim, but it almost certainly is. But the simple reading of the Mishnah would suggest one particular view. And here's the question. What makes vegetables grow during the summer season when there is heat? Well, the shade of the tree helps. The leaves that fall off the tree fertilize. The ground fertilizes. Right? All right, and maybe, I don't know what else it comes from. And the original seed. The original seed is mutter, the vegetable seeds. The ground is mutter. Let's assume the leaves fall off the tree. It's the summer season. But then you have the shade of the tree, which is aser, because it's not a sheva tree. If in fact the Chachamim believe Zev is a goyim is mutter, why didn't they permit you to plant the vegetables and take advantage of the shade of the tree during the summer, if after all it's only one contributor to the growth of the vegetables? If they really hold Zev is a goyim is mutter, then even it should be permissible to plant any of these things even during the summer season, even though they benefit from the shade, because the shade is not enough. There are other contributors to their growth as well. So why does the Gemara think it's possible that the Chachamim in this Mishnah believe Zev is Goyim is Mutter? They can't hold Zev is Goyim is Mutter. So Tosfos, not responding to this, responding to something else, which we'll eventually get to Rashi on the top of Mem Tes Amud Aleph, makes the following observation. He says, if you go to on the top of Mem Tes Amud Aleph, I'm going to just pull out a line. It's against my general principles, but I'm going to do it here anyway, to pull one line out of a Rishon. But on the fourth line in Tosos, the last wide line in the top Tosos, the second word, Tosos says, the ein nikra zeh v'zeh goreim ela kishishnehem me'inyan echad. In order to be called zeh v'zeh goreim, it has to be that they both do the same thing. If I have, a food that I want to transform, and I use various kinds of enzymes or bacteria or whatever else it is, and I go from A to B, and then B to C, and then C to D in various stages. If any one of those stages is transformed through an enzyme that's trafe somehow, whatever that is, it's usur. That's not called Zev Zeh Goreim. It's true. I needed enzyme A to move step one. I need enzyme B to do step two. I need enzyme C to do step three. Right? They're all causes. But if any one of those enzymes is trafe, the whole thing is trafe. As opposed to if in order to do stage A, I need two different catalysts, and one is trafe and one is kosher. That's called Zev Zeh Goreim. So in the Mishnah, that's the difference. There are different things that contribute to the growth of the seed. There's first the original seed, whether that's Matarbana. Then you have the shade. Then you might have the water. And then you have the fertilizer. Now, if we leave the seed part out for the moment, then leave the water part out for the moment. When the Gemara talks about Zev Zeh Goreim being an issue in play, and a machlokas, is when you're talking about fertilizing the vegetables. And where the vegetables derive their nutrients from? A, from what's in the ground already, and B, from the decomposing rotting vegetation. So there, the rotting vegetation is aser, the ground is mutter, that's called Zev Zeh Goreim, and then it might be a machlokas. Is it mutter or is it aser? But if you're benefiting directly from the shade of the tree, So if I had two trees that shaded the vegetables, one was mutter, one was aser, and they're both kind of shading each one halfway, okay, that would be Zev Zeh Goreim. But no, the issue of function of shading the vegetables in this Mishnah is all being done by the Asherah tree. And therefore, if the vegetables benefit from the Asherah tree's shade, that's not Zev Zeh Goreim, even though you also need fertilizer and you need other things as well. If the shade component, which helps stuff grow, is solely of Isser, it doesn't matter that the fertilizer is Shelheter, that's not called Zev Zeh Goreim. Zev Zeh Goreim can only be when you take one particular process of transformation, and within that process, the catalyst or the agent is partially Mutter, partially Aser. Then we can discuss, that's called Zev Zeh Goreim, and now we can discuss, is it Mutter or is it Aser?
Yeah, but in this case, you can't say that the water provided this change and the leaves provided this change. So you didn't have a chain of changes. They all contributed to the simple growth of the...
You should have given a parallel. You gave a serial.
I agree. So you're right. You're right. You're 100% correct in that. The question, you're offering what would be, why am I saying, defense of Rashi. You're challenging the Rishonim, who would say, in other words, I gave you a case of in cereal, but the Rishonim are assuming it doesn't matter, right? many of the Rishonim are assuming that if they are performing different functions, even though it's at the same time, if each one is necessary, each function is regarded as a separate issue. There is a passage in the Ramban. There's a passage in the Ramban where he sort of might be adopting some type of a middle ground in between the two. I think the Ramban's case, which we're going to see in a moment, it's at the bottom of the page, is a case where you plant, let's say, an egos, a walnut, and the walnut was orla. You're not allowed to get hana from it, right? The walnut was taken off a tree that had grown in the last, you know, fruit from the first 3 years. And now you put the walnut in the ground, and the question is what grows from that called zevah zagorim? Why? Because you need the walnut, which is the seed, and you need the ground as well. So Rashi seems to call that zevah zagorim. Rashi, we're going to see, calls that zevah zagorim. And Tosfos says, that's what, that line I read in Tosfos was reacting against that. And the Ramban, who I think does agree with Tosfos' principle broadly, says, no, that's mamish zevah zagorim. Right? And it's almost, I don't know that it's because it's not in cereal, but he sees in that, I think the Ramban is just seeing that those are sort of basically the same functions. I mean, it's not, in other words, the seed in the ground, there are multiple things working in the ground to make it grow. Right? So your question, I think, relates very much to that Ramban. Is the Ramban a question of serial versus sequential, serial versus simultaneous? Or is the Ramban really just defining how you define one function, two functions a little differently, but would agree that it doesn't matter whether it's serial or it's simultaneous? That requires a little thought. Yeah.
Is it safe to say that if you put up your own shade, there's no shade, everything's fine?
You mean if you put up shade and you don't need the tree?
If you
built your own, let it put your little plastic
to make the tree irrelevant.
That should render it mutter. Okay, so that is.
Does it matter that it would be not impossible, but just better to have these things?
So I would say that once
the catalyst example, you couldn't have cheese without rennet.
Right.
In
so
this example, you could have a vegetable without the shade and without the leaf.
But then the question's going to come back, right? In other words, then why isn't them? Why? If you're right about that, we have to work from text to svara, not the other way. Right? Why does the Mishnah think that it's a problem planting in the tzel? Why does the Mishnah think that the Chachamim, who argue with Rabbi Yosei here, who are permissive, hold Zevah Zagorim as Mutter? Why then do they prohibit planting in the shade? Right, the shade, we agree, it probably grows without the shade. It's not going to grow as well, you know, if you take away its shade. It's not going to drop dead. And nonetheless, the Gemara is assuming that's not called Zevah Zagorim. Right, so even when something is not absolutely essential, it would appear, it's still not called Zevah Zagorim. Now, there's another question that has to be asked as well, which is, let's assume for the moment that Gemara is right, that this machlokas is about Zevah Zagorim. Since when is Zevah Zagorim mutar l'chatchila? Since when is it mutar l'chatchila? Zevah Zagorim, if I have something that's asur b'hana, so even if it's not going to make the thing asur because it alone doesn't transform it, why am I allowed to use that? And if that's the case, why am I allowed? Let's say the Chacham holds Zevah Zagorim is mutar, right? And the fact that the dead leaves are going to fertilize the stuff in addition to the ground providing the nutrients, why is it mutar to plant there l'chatchila? I understand. If you did it, then the Chacham would say it's mutar. But why is it mutar to do that l'chatchila? So I'll answer the last question first before we run. The Ritva suggests, and he's not the only one, that Zevah Zagorim is only Asur L'chatchila. For those who hold it's Mutar B'di'eved, it's only Asur L'chatchila if you're actually directly using the Isser. But in this particular case, all you're doing is you're taking the seeds and you're planting them in the ground. Right now, you're not doing anything with the Asherah tree. And so only later that the benefit is going to come, so then Zevah Zagorim is mutter even to do l'chatchila. That's, I think, what the Ritva suggests. Okay, so let's leave that part aside. But now, let's see how the Gemara responds to this challenge. But that is the concept of Zevah Zagorim. And it apparently is very important in the food industry, of understanding that principle, of knowing what is and what is not a Zevah Zagorim. Because we paskin that Zevah Zagorim is mutter, b'di'eved. Which would mean that if you know you have a food company that was manufacturing something, and we don't necessarily have control, but we have to decide whether the food is kosher or not. So if in fact the only impediment is that the food will actually be kosher. Whereas if it's a process in cereal, and one of those processes happens to use only iser, so then it would be a problem even with the oven. Okay.
Would you care to comment on why my great-grandfather, Rabbi Margolis, paskened that all cheese is kosher? And it's rumored that the Rav allowed Kraft cheese in his house and
okay.
refrigerator.
Okay.
But today...
okay.
And when I actually... When I've actually asked the Rav about this once, hesitatingly, because I don't want to make a fuss over cheese, he led me to believe now there's kosher cheese around, it's a minhag to eat kosher cheese.
Okay, so I'll
tell. Didn't say it exactly. That
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what I know about this, but it's not related, as far as I know, to Zevas Egorin. It's relevant to something in the previous parak. So I'll answer briefly what I know, what I've been told. Firstly, I know from very reliable sources that the Rav used to serve people Kraft cheese. I know this from the Bernstein family. One story I was told is that the Rav, they used to turn on lights on Yom Tov in the house. When the Rav was asked, he didn't say you could do it. He said that's what we did in Europe. But with the cheese, he used to serve to people. Rav Shechter told me, when I asked Rav Shechter about this, so he said that the Rav held it was halacha of emor and kain. He pointed me to a tosis which I had not able to find in the second parak. I wasn't able to find this, but I'll tell you what the basic halach background was. It's a machlokus as to why the chachamim would go there on gvinas akum, on cheese of non-Jews. The two primary views that evolve in this discussion are, number one, they use non-kosher rennet, which is the problem of davar ha-maimin, even though you can't taste it. The Mishnah, the Gemara's case, I think Shmuel says, the mamidin oso, they're mamin it, they curdle it, they cause it to literally stand up, bi'or kevas nevela. They would use the stomach hide, the lining of the stomach, and if they didn't, if you shechted the animal, it would be fine. We're not worried about basar b'chalav in that case, because there's no cooking, it's only midrabban, and you can't taste the basar, they weren't gozer there. But if they took a treif, an animal, it was a nishchat, and now they take the stomach lining and they dip it into the milk and then pull it out and it starts the process because the rennet on the stomach lining causes the curdle. So the rennet, even though rennet in the abstract is not treif, but when it's attached to its origin, which is treif, the meat, then it takes on that characteristic. By the way, it's the same way that yeast, Fleischmann's yeast, you don't need to sell on Pesach. It's yeast that's pulled out. If sourdough is sa'or, yeast is just bacteria or whatever it is, not bacteria, whatever, let the biologist correct me. Let me come back to this. But the rennet on the stomach lining, when it's attached there, is treif. Okay? Until it's been extracted and there's no basar left in it. So that was the concern. Now, the other consideration, the other shita that the Rishonim adopt, Rabbeinu Tam and the Chachmei Narbona, is that the Gzera on Gvinas Akum was because of Giloy. Giloy was the prohibition of drinking liquids that were left uncovered because a snake might spit venom into it. And we're afraid the Goyim left the milk uncovered. It's a din of Sakana. It's not a din of Isser V'Heter. It's a din of danger. And we're more machmir by danger than we are by Isser V'Heter. And therefore, they would go there on Gvinas Akum for that reason. Now, why does that matter? What matters is the following. If you believe that the problem is that non-kosher rennet, so the Rambam already writes, and the Shulchan Aruch paskens this way, that even if you live in a place where everybody uses vegetable rennet, right, they use prachim, it doesn't matter. It's a gzeiras chachamim of low plug. In other words, they made a gzeira not eating non-Jews cheese because, at least in their day, they used non-kosher rennet. It doesn't matter if you know the rennet is kosher. If you didn't either see it being made or make it yourself, that's a machlokas, you're not allowed to eat it. Because the gzeira, even if the reason doesn't apply in your locale, the gzeira applies anyway. And that's the way the Mechaber paskens, and that's the way the Ramah says you're supposed to do unless there's a minhag to the contrary. Rabbeinu Tam, however, held that we paskin the reason is because of giloy, because the stuff might have been left uncovered. Now, if you leave food and if you leave drinks uncovered today, will you drink it? The answer is yes. But the Gemara made a gzera on it, so the Shulchan Aruch already says that today we're not makbid on giloy. Because Tosus already says, these snakes that do this are not so common amongst us. Now, I know somebody's going to ask the question, just because the reason doesn't apply, why do things say or not apply? I don't want to answer that question now. I probably, maybe when I give a special share on Labor Day, I'll revisit this issue. But bottom line is, we're not makbid on Gilui. So the Balei HaTosfos assume, if the reason for the Gzeron, if Gvinas Akum is just part of the din of Gilui, and we don't hold the Gilui, then if you know the Ren, it's kosher, right? You still have to worry about that, but if you have no reason to assume the Ren, it's not kosher, then it's mutter to eat Kraft cheese, let's say. So, and that was the position of Rabbeinu Tam and Chachmei Rabbona. The Mechaber really doesn't like it. The Ramah says, if you have a minhag that way, okay. But otherwise, the Ramah says, you're supposed to hold like the Mechaber. So I don't know where I believe. So that's what Rav Shechter said to me. I can't find the halacha of Ein Morin Kain part. But I can find the halacha part in Tosfos. And that's what he attributed the Rav Shita to. Now, where the Rav got his minhag from Rabbeinu, to hold like Rabbeinu Tam, Chachmei Rabbona, I have no idea. But it may be, what Rabbi Lichtenstein suggested, maybe because it was the difficulty of availability of kosher cheese. But once kosher cheese is sufficiently available, so then maybe there's no reason or basis to rely upon the sheet of the Chachmei Rabbona. So in this particular case, the Rav's position was an unusual kula, right? And a lot of things that are new today that are unusual chumras. But in this particular case, it really was a kula. But I am told by the Bernstein family, the Rav used to serve the Kraft cheese, not just that he had it, you know. So it's not a rumor. I have from Edus Brura to that effect. But what the Rav held as public policy generally, I don't know. That's where Rav Shechter claimed that the Rav was held halacha ve'marin kein, which could also be true. It could also be true as well. I have no reason to think it's not true. But that, I think, is where the Rav's position and perhaps your great-grandfather's position was as well. I suspect your great-grandfather's time, there's probably even less kosher cheese available, in this country than when the Rav was here, So anyway, that's what I assume. But I don't think there's any relationship to Zev Zagorin. But that's what I assume. Okay? Fine. All right. So now, the Gemara, coming back to Mishnah, the Gemara has presented a suggestion that they're arguing about Zev Zagorin. Now, why is that such a bad thing? It's a bad thing because the following, the second line in the Gemara, Ha'ipcha shamina lehu. They said the exact opposite earlier in the Perek. Ditznan. Rabbi Yose Omer, Shochek Vizora LaRuach, Omate Liyam. Chachamim said earlier on Daf and Gimel Amud Beis that when you have a Avodah Zarah, you have to take it and throw it into the Yam HaMelach or bury it or something like that. You can't scatter it to the wind, grind it up. You know why? Because the Chachamim said, Av Hu Nase Zevel. Because the Avodah Zarah, let's say it's a wooden Avodah Zarah, let's say it's, I don't know, clay Avodah Zarah, that is going to be scattered and it will serve as Zevel. And the Torah says, V'lo yidbak b'yotcha me'uma menacherim. You can't get any enough from Avodah Zarah. Now, when that fertilizer, if it fertilizes, scatters to the wind, that you're not going to be growing Avodah Zarah out of ground up Avodah Zarah. It might contribute a little bit to the fertilization. And Rabbi Yose said, not a problem. And Chacham said, what are you talking about? Afunas Zevel. How can you do it? So you see that the Chachamim hold Zev Zagorim is Aser, and Rabbi Yossi holds Zev Zagorim is Mutter. So how do you put the two together? That's the problem. So the Gemara is going to take a number of different approaches, eventually it's actually going to decide that Rabbi Yossi holds its Mutter. And Rabbi Yossi was just saying, Aliba to you, who hold that Zev Zagorim is Aser, they're going to reread the Mishnah. But right now the Gemara hasn't gotten there. So the Gemara is going to take a couple of different possible routes. First, the Gemara says, Bishlama, Kasha the Rabbanan ad Rabbanan, Kasha the Rabbi Yose ad Rabbi Yose. Bishlama the Rabbi Yose ad Rabbi Yose, Lo Kasha, Hosam the Ka'azel li'ibud, Matir. Hocha the Lo Ka'azel li'ibud, Aser. In that case, it's Azil li'ibud. It's going to destruction. Here, it's not Ka'azel li'ibud, and that's why it's Aser. So here, there's a big machlokas harishon on what this means. Rashi, who's the outlier here, Rashi says, if you look at Rashi, fourth line in the Rashi is in the Gemara, Hasam Ka'azel li'ibud, he says, Le'abdohu miskaven, his intent is to destroy the Avodah Zarah. That's the earlier case, when you grind up the Avodah Zarah. Ukvar b'teila Avodas Kochavim, and the Avodah Zarah is Betela. V'lo gara me Avodas Kochavim sh'nishtaber me'eleha. It's no different than Avodah Zarah, which breaks on its own. What's the din of Avodah Zarah that breaks on its own? So that was a machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is the one who held that Avodah Zarah that breaks on his own is assumed to be batel. But that's what Rashi says. And he says, Hilkach leka zevezeh gorim. It's not zevezeh gorim in the earlier case. Sharei inkan isser kolkach. The only reason why it would be usar, Rashi says, was some type of gzeira. But really, by right, there's no isar involved in here, involved with this, so there's no zevezeh gorim. So Tosa says, Tosa's dibar maskal hasan the kaza libud. He says, what's he talking about? He says, perish bakuntris dila abda miskavein ukvar betei lavahave kavodas kocham shtabrein la. The kasha batuva. Number one, the lamanda amar vodas kocham shnistaber meila asura tikshe. It doesn't work for Rabbi Yochanan. Vafil lamanda shari nami ha'ein mevata yisrael vodas kocham shavod ovei kochavim. In this case, if you want to rely upon the fact that it's being destroyed, that it meila should be batel, a Jew cannot be mevata the avodah zarah of a guy, or the avodah zarah of a Jew for that matter. Nobody can mevata the avodah zarah of a Jew. So if the guy destroyed it, and the guy saw it broken, that would be one thing. But if the Jew is the one who's first destroying it, that can't cut that. Avodah Zarah is not betela. V'o debishal Yisrael nami, I'm Rabbi Yose. Rabbi Yose, when he talks about grinding up an Avodah Zarah early in the parak, he's not only talking about a guy's Avodah Zarah, he's talking about even a Jew's Avodah Zarah. A Jew's Avodah Zarah has no bittul. Once a Jew worships an Avodah Zarah, it is asura forever. And neither a Jew nor a guy can be mevatlet. And what's the proof? The Gemara's examples there, if you remember, I wouldn't have, came from the Egel Azav when it was ground up, and from the Mifletzes that I think Asa's mother had made. And those were Avodah Zarah Shel Yisrael. Vavodas Kocham Shel Yisrael Eina Betela Olamis. So it can't be the way Rashi says, that Hasan de Ka'azal Ibud, that it's not really Asar Bahana. Whereas here it's really Asar Bahana. So there, because it's not really Asar Bahana, Rabbi Yosei is Matir, because it's not Zevezeh Gorim. Whereas here, it's just falling off the tree, that's not Betela. Lachener lafarish de Ka'azal Ibud, de lo shchiach sheyavo lezibo bezria leruach, she'enofel kolkach biachad. In other words, when he says it's Azal Ibud, it means, really, what are the odds of you getting any hana when you grind at the Avodah Zarah and you scatter it to the wind? What are the odds that essentially anything that could be distinguishable that ends up fertilizing your stuff? Whereas here, you see the leaves are falling directly down from the tree, fall on the ground, they decompose, and they, of course they serve as fertilizer. Umikomakom afilu l'chi hagavna chayshi rabbanan. Even so, dafnem gimel on base, the chacham or machmir there. Okay, so the solution the Gemara has presented, which is only a half a solution, is that Rabbi Yosei says the reason why he's mekel, the reason why he's lenient on Daf Memgimon Beis, is because you never actually get hana from the shrikas Avodah Zarah. Whereas here, you actually do get hana from it, and that's where Rabbi Yosei prohibits here, because he holds Zevezeh Gorim is awesome. So now the Gemara says that's very nice. Bishlama the Rabbi Yosei, the Rabbi Yosei Lokasha, the last narrow line in the Gemara. But Hasam the I'm sorry. Bishlama. Next line. Ella the Rabbanon, the Rabbanon. Kasha. That doesn't solve the Rabbanon problem. It's worse. Here the Rabbanon. Here you have the leaves that are falling directly, and you see them decompose, and you know it's not Azali Ibud, and yet the Chachamim permitted under the grounds of Zevezeh Gorim. There they won't let you grind up Avodah Zarah, throw it to the wind, where you may never get any hana. And even if you did get hana, it would be no worse than Zevezeh Gorim. So even with that distinction, you've solved the Rabbi Yosei contradiction. But the Chachamim are even farther apart now. So the Gemara says, Ipoch. You know what? Okay, you got to flip around the Mishnah here, let's say, and say that Rabbi Yosei says you can plant underneath Bimos HaGeshamim, and the Chachamim say you're not allowed to because the leaves fall down and fertilize it, in which case Rabbi Yosei here holds Zevezeh Gorim is Mota, the Chachamim holds Zevezeh Gorim is Aser, and that's consistent with the Mishnah earlier where Rabbi Yosei says you can grind up the Avodah Zarah and scatter it to the wind, and the Chachamim say you're not allowed to because it serves as fertilizer. Okay. The Eboy Sema. Lo tepach. No, you know what? You don't have to flip it around. The Rabbi Yosei, the contradiction in Rabbi Yosei is kiddushanin, as we already taught. In other words, the resolution we used before, that's the correct resolution. Ah, but the Rabbanon, how do you explain the contradiction? The answer is kita amar mar berei the Rav Kahana. Masha mashpiach ba'or pogem ba'basar. Hachanami masha mashpiach ba'nevaya pogem bitzel. So the Chachamim here, do not believe that Zevezeh Gorim is mutter. The Chachamim here believe that you're not actually getting hana from the tree. I'll explain in a moment. First, let me explain what the analogy was. The Gemara quoted, for me, I would have no idea what this means because I don't know so much Gemara. It's a Gemara in Temur of all places. So Rashi tells you, what was Rav Mari's B'reid Rav Kana statement? Mashmashbiach ba'or pokim bebasar. So here, a little bit of background. If you have a behema that you consecrate as a sacrifice, and it's kosher for the Mizbeach, it has no mum, and it gets what we call Kedushas Haguf. It's not simply monetary value, but the animal is infused with Kedusha. And that Kedusha can never completely disappear. Should the animal subsequently get a mum, get a blemish, not be able to be brought as a carbon, you redeem the animal. But even when you redeem the animal, it is still has Kedusha. And therefore, the Torah says, you're not allowed to shear it if it's a sheep, or work with it if it's an ox. If it dies, and it's nevela, you can't feed it to your dogs. You're not allowed to milk it if it's an animal produces milk. Your only heter that you have is to do shchita and achilas basar. And it has to be shchita. It has to be v'chalta v'lo l'klavecha. Okay, it's going to come up in a month and a half in Parshas Re'eh, in the Parsha Basar Taiva. It's called psulei hamukdashim. So as a general rule, psulei hamukdashim, because they have kedusha, there are things that you can't do with it even when you shecht it. You're not allowed to sell it in certain ways in the shuk that would be a bizayon to kachim. The only mitigating factor where we allow bizayon to kachim is if it's something that's going to increase its economic value. So then, why if you're going to sell it in the shuk, you redeem it. But if when you sell it in the shuk, we allow you to do things that will allow you to get more money, it means that when you come to redeem it in the first place, it will have greater economic value and it will serve as benefit to Hekdesh. So the Mishnah, the Gemara there says that when you take this animal, there's a way you're not allowed to strip the hide off the animal. Because it's a derech bizayon. Now it happens to be that if you strip the hide off the animal, that way you get the hide more intact and it's more valuable. So the Gemara wants to know why you're not allowed to, in fact, it's called margilin. You start somewhere at the bottom and you strip up to the top and you get the hide off almost in one piece. So why you're not allowed to do it? After all, Hekdesh is going to be nene, because when you come to redeem this, you'll get more money. The answer is Masha Mashpiach Ba'or Pogein Ba'basar. Because when you strip it that way, apparently it's bad for the basar, it's bad for the meat. And therefore, even though it will increase the economic value of the ore, it's going to decrease the economic value of the meat, and therefore there's no hana to Hekdesh. Okay. So now, the Gemara says the same thing is true here. You're not actually getting hana from the Nevayeh. You know why? Because when you plant these vegetables in the shade, in the Asherah tree shade during the rainy season, so actually you lose. It's bad for the vegetables that it's in the shade. You want as much possible sun at that time of year, and the tree prevents it from getting there. So when you look at the situation and you say, does the Asherah tree benefit you, or does the Asherah tree your vegetables, or not? The answer is you get no net benefit from the Asherah tree, because while you benefit from the fertilization, you lose from the shade. So it's a wash. So the answer is, if I were to ask you, how much economic value do you get from the Asherah tree and your finished vegetables? The answer is zero. And that's why the Chachamim, who are very machmir there, it's not that they don't zevezeh gorim is mutter. The Chachamim believe you're not getting hana here, so there's nothing to talk about. But there, it's straight out hana from the fertilizer there. So what would actually turn out, I don't know if any of the Rishonim say this, is that if you adopt this answer right now, everybody holds zevezeh gorim is aser. Right? Rabbi Yosei holds zevezeh gorim is aser, and the reason why it's mutter to be shochek v'zera l'ruach is because you don't get any benefit there. And whereas here you do get benefit from the vaya, and the Chachamim believe that there it's also because zevezeh gorim is also. They think you do get enough benefit, and here the Chachamim believe your net benefit is zero because what you gain in the fertilization is offset by the shade. Okay. So anyway, so that's where, I think this is probably a good stopping point, because the next part is going to get a little more complicated, but this is where the Gemara leaves it right now, on the assumption, it seems, that everybody holds zevezeh goreim is aser. The problem that the Gemara is going to face comes from a case of Orla, where Rabbi Yosei seems to hold, almost explicitly, zevezeh goreim is mutter. In which case, the Gemara is going to have to explore new avenues. One possibility that should not be dismissed, by the way, is it possible that there's a difference between zevezeh goreim by Avodah Zarah and zevezeh goreim everywhere else. In other words, there are many things where we are more stringent by Avodah Zarah. Maybe this is another one of them. So the Gemara will most definitely explore that possibility.